Hey everyone, welcome to the Paradox College Podcast. I'm Caleb Hickson, and on today's episode, we are joined by Lizzie McFarlane. All right, welcome everybody to the podcast. Lizzie, hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Yeah? I'm doing great.
Yeah?
Uh-huh.
You feeling good today?
I am. Caleb, you know this, but I have a cough, so if I start sounding like a frog at any point, we're just going to push past it.
Yeah, I bet, you know, I think everybody's used to that at this point.
Me sounding like a frog?
Not you sounding like a frog, but people coughing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Springtime, it's just the worst.
The allergies.
It's stuck right in my throat,
And we don't have a mute button, so we're just going to get it all.
Yep.
And we're going to roll with it.
Get some cough outtakes.
Yeah.
That'll be cool.
That'll be great. I'll do my best post-production to really, like, see if I can jazz it up.
Kind of enhance them.
I wish I knew how to make, like, those little songs, like, where you take somebody who says something and then you turn it into a song.
Oh, I like those, yes.
And then I would do it with your cough. That would be weird. I doubt anybody would listen to that.
No, but it's kind of funny. We would enjoy it.
We would. Yeah. And it would be fun making it.
Absolutely.
Lizzie, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I'm glad that we're getting to do this today. For the listeners, today is Lizzie's unofficial slash kind of sort of official last day of her college residency.
Yes.
And so what I wanted to do this morning is sit down, record a podcast episode with you, and just kind of capture your year as a resident. For those of you who are listening and you're like, what the heck's a residency? We do college residencies at Paradox where it is a one-year commitment for men and women who have a desire to serve in ministry, want to get some experience, and want to learn what it looks like to work for a church. And so Lizzie was actually our inaugural, alongside of Audrey, our inaugural resident. This is the first year of the residency. She's done it. She is now completed her year. Can you imagine 1 year ago today?
No, I cannot. 1 year ago today, I was in New York. I was living my best life.
Yes.
I was having a great time.
Your best life is New York.
It is. It's strolling the streets of New York, but this is good too.
Yes, this is still nice.
This is good too.
This is still great. So, so today's your unofficial last day because technically Tuesday is, but Tuesday is going to be
but for like 4 hours. Right. So,
So today we're just kind of saying is like your unofficial last day. And we're going to do this podcast. We're going to kind of look back on the year. We're going to kind of just take a deep dive into Lizzie and all things the Lord has done in and through you, and just kind of give you an opportunity to share some of that wisdom to our students who are listening, to anybody who listens to this, so that we can capture once and for all Lizzie McFarlane.
Oh, I love it. I love interview podcasts. Wonderful. This is my first time I've ever been on a podcast, which is very exciting because I love podcasts and I listen to a lot of them.
Well, welcome to it.
Thank you.
Surprisingly enough,
first of many.
A lot of my guests, this is their first podcast.
Is that surprising?
It's not.
It's really not that surprising.
It's really not. And I always try to be like, well, it's kind of sort of not that big of a deal. We don't have a whole lot of listeners, but
it's still exciting.
I'm glad that we get to be a part of that dream for you. So let's start in the beginning. Let's start from...
I went to Genesis for a second.
That could be the beginning. Let's start with your story, how the Lord saved you. What was it like growing up? Take as long as you want and just give the people an idea of how God brought you to this moment.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I grew up in South Lake, Texas, which is like 30 minutes from Fort Worth, where I currently live. I was an only child. I grew up a really good kid. I loved to read. I was honestly really not shy as a kid, but really introverted. Like I just had at any time like one friend that was my best friend, and that was my life.
That's shocking.
I know. It's really shocking to a lot of people because it's so opposite of how I am now. But that's who I was as a kid. Being an only child, you kind of like have to be pretty independent and do your own thing. So that's a big part of it. But grew up. My parents were great. At 9 years old, I started going to Sky Ranch summer camps because they just wanted some place to send me for the summer, and my friend invited me. And I went, and I loved it. I was a big learner. Again, I love to read. So I, like, love to learn about God and intake all the knowledge, but I really, like, just had no actual practical application of what it meant to be a Christian, but I loved to learn. I was always the one that would, like, raise their hand and ask for extra Bible study time so I could like talk more about the Old Testament. I was very nerdy as a child, which I loved. And anyway, so I went to Sky Ranch a bunch growing up. Life was fairly simple back at home. I have a really bad memory, so I don't remember like what it was like to be 12 and 13 and all these things. So my synopsis of my childhood is honestly pretty short because I have a terrible memory. But anyway, I went to Sky Ranch all throughout my years. And then at 17, I was at summer camp. It was one of my very last times I would be able to go to camp. And I became a believer. I have this really distinct memory of listening to How He Loves Us as we are worshiping. And I like fell to my knees and started crying. And then in that moment, I was like, I actually believe everything I've been taught for like 10 years. Wow. And it was so powerful. And it was such a stark before and after moment for me. And it was really confusing when I went back home because Southwick, Texas, a lot of people would say they're Christians. A lot of people are Christians, but I had always said I was a Christian, but I never actually knew what it meant to follow Jesus. And so I went back home and all my friends were like, you do this every summer. You come back and you're like, I love God. And then you're just yourself.
Wow.
And I was like, yeah, you're right. But this is different. Like, I actually believe this now. So it was really beautiful because God actually transformed my life from who I was before to a completely new creation. And I felt that so powerfully. Like, I didn't want the same things. I didn't think of things the same. I just truly felt redeemed from the former self. And I looked the same to a lot of people around me because I'd always said I was a Christian, but I knew it was different. And from then forth, got to learn how to live that out. And God gave me really sweet community and led me to the University of Texas the next year, where I just developed amazing community and mentors. And from then forth, got to follow Jesus.
That's awesome.
It's awesome.
That's really cool. What do you think you'd say to students who are like, that story kind of sounds similar to me, except for without that moment of it, where it's like, man, I grew up, always thought I was a Christian, but then never really knew what that meant.
I think what I love most about my story is it really is all about the Lord, because I didn't suddenly change all of my behavior and become super different and better and look starkly different to everyone around me. It really was just an interior change that can only be attributed to believing that Christ died for my sins and was raised again, conquering my sins so that I could have access to God.
Like, yeah.
That is the only thing that changed, is me truly believing that. And then my whole life was different. And so in some ways, it was frustrating to me at the beginning of becoming a believer, because I was like, oh, I don't have this cool story. There's not like distinct proof of my change as a person. And yet there doesn't need to be, because I was different because God made me different. I acknowledged that I was a sinner and got to just love God and pursue Him from there. And so I think it's helped me understand that God is the only one that accomplishes salvation. It's not about what we do or how we change. Like, my change is not the point. How I change outwardly is not the point of my salvation. It's that I like now get to have a relationship with God. And I just don't think it matters that much that we have this big, impressive story.
Sure.
And I think the reason we want it is because others will see us and notice the distinct difference. And so I think it was something God also gave me to humble me specifically, that this is only about me, and you get to love me and celebrate that I have saved you, even if other people don't realize how big of a deal that is. And so I think, one, I just would not worry about what your story is about learning to follow God. Like, it doesn't matter if it's impressive. And two, just ask yourself, do I believe truly that Jesus died on the cross for my sins, and that's all I need to be justified in front of God? And if so, that's great. Don't worry how it sounds to others.
Yeah, I think we talk a lot about how believers are haunted by doubt. And for a lot of students, that's hard because they have maybe just this idea that if I were truly saved, maybe they believe this lie that if I were truly saved, I wouldn't doubt. And yet, I think that it's actually an evidence of salvation that you doubt, because somebody who's dead inside doesn't care if they're alive or not. Somebody whose heart is dead does not lose sleep thinking, am I really a child of God or not? They don't care.
Yeah.
Like, it's only the heart that's been made alive that cares.
Yeah. I think about the Pharisees a lot. They were confident they were doing it right. Yeah. And so they never questioned whether they were doing it wrong. Totally. They just were very confident they had it all together. And I see a lot of that behavior in my life before actually becoming a believer, a lot of just confidence that I was a good person. And then I started following Jesus. And yeah, the doubt came and the questions came, but that was distinctly different from the false confidence I had had before in my own abilities.
And so I think if the enemy can get you spending all of your time, energy, and emotional effort on am I or am I not, then he's already won the battle because you're now going to be taking up all your time thinking about that instead of trying to figure out how do you follow Jesus and how do you continue to grow in your faith? How do you work out the salvation that God has given you by going and loving your neighbor? And so, yeah, if that's your story, I think that that is okay to wrestle with those things. But I hope that you hear the encouragement from Lizzie's story of, man, that's probably an evidence of the Lord's presence in your life. And you don't have to be like just this fully confident person to continue to pursue Jesus, but you actually can rest on God's faithfulness. It's not, and I think Jim said this, and I'm sure he probably quoted it from somebody, or maybe he didn't. Maybe Jim just came up with this, but it was great. And he said this in a sermon a while back where he said, it's not the strength of your faith that matters. It's the object of your faith. And so it's not how much you believe that you're Jesus that matters, but rather it's Jesus holding you that matters.
Yeah, absolutely. I have seen such in myself and in others, a desire for our faith to be strong and be noticed by others, and to why don't I feel all these things? Why don't I want all these things? And I think those doubts about our own faith keep us from seeing Jesus more and keep us from having stronger faith in him and more powerful faith in him because we're consumed by looking at us.
Yeah.
And the only thing that matters is the Lord and what he has done. And the more we fixate on that, the stronger our faith will become, but that's not the point.
Sure.
Exactly. That's not what matters.
Exactly. Cool. So you enroll at UT.
Hook'em Horns.
You head out to Austin. Freshman year, Lizzie, what was your college experience like?
Oh, best year. Best years ever. I love UT so much. I'm so passionate about Austin, if anyone knows that. I just thought it was really cool. A little backstory. I only wanted to leave Texas when I applied to colleges. I visited 7 different states looking at colleges and didn't plan to apply to any school in Texas. And then I became a believer. And literally overnight, I only applied to UT. I was like, this is where I want to go. This is the only school I want to go to. And there was no reason, which I think you will see a lot in my story, that there's not like this big logical reason for why that happened. I think it was just that was what God had for me, and my emotions and my wants really lined up with that. And because I'd been praying for it so consistently, I could kind of trust that where I felt led was from the Lord, and because it was so starkly different from what I had wanted before. So anyway, I only applied to UT, ended up going to UT. I loved my 4 years in Austin. I don't know. I did a lot of stuff, which was great. I had really incredible mentors. Pretty much from day one, I met the people that are my community still now, which is such a beautiful testament to God just giving me people from the beginning. I got to see several of my people become believers that weren't at the beginning. That was a beautiful thing God did. For the first time in my life, I got really connected to a local church. It was a church plant, and I got to see it grow my final 2 years of college, which was awesome. Yeah, I loved college so much. I loved college mainly because I had great people surrounding me, and I really learned what it looked like to lean into community for the first time and to be discipled and grown in my faith, and what that looked like to live that out. So it was beautiful.
I think what you said is true is and what I think the people listening to this podcast are going to hear a lot from your story is just this theme of the Lord doing things in your life that make little to no sense.
Little to no is a good way to put it.
But you being faithful to follow. Where does that come from?
So The other day I took a spiritual gifts test, which is funny. And it's not funny. It's great. But faith was one of my very top ones. And that was very surprising to me because I was a journalism major in college. I'm a natural questioner. I'm very curious. Like, I have struggled with doubt a lot. I just like to ask a lot of questions. But I think when I took this test and faith was near the top, it doesn't mean the test was right, but I kind of started to think about it. And because of the gospel, if it is true, everything is different. Mm-hmm. And everything has to be different because of the gospel. And so it's a very simple question of like, is it true or is it not? And because once I believed it was true, my whole life changed because of that. Mm-hmm. And I never really struggled with, I'm halfway in, I'm halfway out. It was always like, if this is real, I'm all in.
Yeah.
And so it was easy to see that, yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but I believe that the Holy Spirit is in me. I believe that God is guiding me. And so I need to do it because I believe that God is more powerful than myself. And so for me, it was kind of not natural. Like, we all struggle with sin and all like have to wrestle with that part of ourselves, but we all struggle with sin. So at times I doubt the Lord and don't want to follow him, but I truly believe he is more powerful. I truly believe he knows what is best for me. And so if he is leading me somewhere, I want to go there, even if it's not logical to me.
Yeah. It reminds me of the, and I forget which song it is, but the Maverick City Music song where they say, if he says it, we believe it.
I love that song.
Where it's like, to me, that kind of summarizes faith.
Yeah.
To where people with the gift of faith, it's very evident in their life where you feel like the Lord said it, so you believe it and you do it and you go. Whereas a lot of people are like, I think God said this, but like, I don't know, I'm going to wait like 3 or 4 more signs and then I'll maybe think about obeying.
Yeah. There's this verse, and I do not know where it is, which is so silly of me because I quote it all the time, but it's, the wisdom of the wise is foolishness to those who are perishing, yeah, but to those who are being saved, it is the power of God. Mm-hmm. And I think that just encapsulates being a believer so well. Like, what is wise to us because we believe God is leading us is going to look foolish to a lot of the world, and that's okay. Like, yeah, we don't have to justify it or explain it because we believe God is leading us to it.
Yeah, that's good. So then in college, what would be your advice to an incoming freshman who's like trying to stay Christian in college? Or what would your advice be?
I think they're really simple things. It's nothing profound. It's find community from day one. Be committed to your Bible and be committed to spending time in quiet. I think that is a big one, that we are surrounded by noise when we get to college. We are constantly surrounded by people. It is a beautiful, fun thing. But if we don't take time to like draw away, process, sit with God, we're going to get caught up in what is happening around us. And even if it's just like, even if we have amazing Christian friends and we spend all our time with Christians, like, we still need to spend time with the Lord and letting him speak into our lives. Like, Christian friends are not substitute for time with the creator of the universe.
Yeah.
And so I always think about how Jesus said, like, he drew away to lonely places and prayed. I think even the word lonely is such a beautiful thing. Like, it's okay to be lonely sometimes so that you can like be in communion with God. So that's a big one. I'd say getting connected to a local church from day one, because being a part of the body of believers is profound, and God calls us to do it over and over again in the New Testament. And so it is a very important part of our faith. And then that place also, I had incredible mentors that were 3-4 years older than me in college. And that was a big part of my story, is just getting to watch them live out relationships, getting to watch them raise kids, like getting to see how people a couple of steps ahead of me lived the Christian walk in their everyday life really shaped how I lived out my faith in everyday life. And so when you join a church, you're around older people that can play that role for you too.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my advice.
I think going back to kind of your first point of silence and solitude, it's something that maybe God's just bringing back up in my heart a lot, which is just this idea that we are so distracted by everything all the time. Mm-hmm. 100% of our life is filled with things that it is very difficult for us to then be able to even acknowledge or recognize what's going on inside of us. Mm-hmm. Because everything is going around us, outside of us, is so chaotic and hectic that it's hard for us a lot of the times to realize how we are. And the picture that I've used before, and I don't know if this will make sense over a podcast, but I'll try it, that I like to think of, like, our lives right now in our culture and society. It's like the person in that the little wind chamber with the dollar bills flying up everywhere. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And they're just, like, going everywhere, and they're trying to grab all these things. I think that that's most of the time what our interpersonal self is, is like that person in there. And what silence and solitude does is it gives yourself a chance to turn off the wind and allow the dollar bills, which are the things in our life, to kind of start slowly falling to the bottom, to where you can then begin to pick them up and organize them. Without that, you're just in this swirling typhoon of money, and you don't know what to do other than just try to, like, grab what's right in front of you. And what silence and solitude does is it allows you not to to get rid of those things, but to just make sense of them and process them and be able to handle them rightly. But we just don't do that as Western people.
Yeah.
And I think that that also, I guess maybe for the people listening, how do you like create rhythms of that?
Well. So I think it's really helpful for me to think about just what Jesus says about himself. So he talks about being the Prince of Peace. And anyone who's listening to this knows that we are not peaceful people. We really struggle with peace. And so that really leads me to the question of, why do we struggle with peace? Because God has said that because of him, we have peace and we don't need to be frantic and overwhelmed and overcome by the world. And so asking the question of, like, this is what Jesus said would be true about my life. Why does that not happen? And so then I think a lot of it is because we don't follow the rhythms of what God has laid out in the Bible to lead to a life of peace. And so examples of that being pulling away to silence and solitude, having, like, lonely moments that allow us to connect with the Lord, practicing Sabbath, things like that. Sabbath has been probably the most profound impact on my faith in recent years. In 2020, me and my now husband Grant were engaged. We were in the middle of the COVID pandemic, and I mean, as we all were, and we were, like, at home with our families, and just were so, there was nothing to do, but we were still so stressed and so overcome. And we said, now is the perfect time to start practicing Sabbath. We have always wanted to do it. God tells us to do it. He tells us it'll be better for us. And so let's do it. It's the perfect time. We have nowhere else to go. And we started practicing it, and it just became, one, really fun. Like, it is fun to realize that for a day you have no responsibilities other than just being with your favorite people, by yourself, talking to God. And two, it just profoundly changed the way we rest and then lived out the rest of our time as humans. Like, it just became this rhythm that became a bedrock for the rest of our activities and allowed us to do the rest of our life better and more in tune with the Lord.
So actually, let's talk about Sabbath for the moment then. How would you describe some misconceptions of Sabbath?
I think the biggest misconception of Sabbath is that because of X season of life I'm in, I can't Sabbath. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest one, and I'm so firmly against it because it's not true. If God said this is for everyone.
Yeah.
If he created all people and he said to rest, then he has enabled it for every human in whatever season they're in. I always use you, Caleb, as an example because I'm like, Caleb has three children. Mm-hmm. If Caleb can Sabbath, you can Sabbath.
Yeah, but really.
Three children under the age of five. It's madness. I just think Sabbath is for everyone. And if we can't take a day of the week to rest and let the Lord do it, then we probably have too much in our life.
Yeah.
And we're probably need to remove some things. But what needs to come first is us setting our lives up to model how God has created our lives to be. And then if our lives are still unstable and overwhelmed with stuff, then we probably need to remove some stuff so we can follow the Lord.
So you're saying that the commandment doesn't say thou shalt keep the Sabbath day holy as long as your schedule permits.
Then we will never, ever keep the Sabbath day holy.
Yeah.
Because our life will never naturally fall to a rhythm where we can obey Sabbath.
It is interesting, right, to think through how the Sabbath has just almost become this optional thing for Christians where they're like, if I can Sabbath this week, I will. And yet it is part of the Ten Commandments. Mm-hmm. And for those of you listening, the Ten Commandments are still relevant to us. It is not as though we don't obey the Ten Commandments anymore. But and it wasn't just something from the Old Testament too. Like there are plenty of examples in the New Testament of the idea of Sabbath being kept and not going away now that Jesus is here. And so I think that's a great misconception, is just like this idea of like, I just can't in this season of my life commit to Sabbath, because the Bible does not really give any provisions for that. Mm-hmm. And if God is the provider, if he's the one who's actually in control, we get to actively put our trust in him by saying, okay, you are in control. And even if I feel like I can't, I'm going to actively put my trust in you by doing what you call me to do. And in a way, almost forcing God to be a man of his word.
Yeah, Pastor Jim will always say it's not just biblical, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And I feel like that has been huge for me with Sabbath. It's not this another rule that God has put on me that I have to follow. It's this beautiful thing that will enrich my life in so many ways and allow me to walk more fully how God has created me to walk in the world. And it's a beautiful thing. It's an amazing thing. It's not an extra burden.
So maybe just take us through like a typical Sabbath rhythm for you. When does it start?
This is my favorite thing.
What do you usually do? You don't have to necessarily give specific examples, but just like give the people a framework for how you guys Sabbath.
Okay, perfect. I think Sabbath does look different for every person, depending on what is delightful to you, okay? Sabbath should be fun and it should be restful. So Grant, because I've worked at the church this past year, Sundays were work days. So Grant and I would start, Grant is my husband. We would start Friday night at like 6 p.m. and we would start with date night. And so we'd go out on date night. Oh, a big thing, we turn off our phones for most of Sabbath. We don't use our phones, don't use social media, don't text people, turn them off. We'd go out on date night. We'd do whatever we're doing, go get dinner, go watch a movie, whatever. Then we'd sleep in really late the next morning, like wake up whenever we want to wake up. Grant and I love to cook, and that is just for us. And so if this is not you, don't do this. But we'd cook a giant breakfast that would usually like bleed over into the afternoon. We both love to read. And so normally I read an entire book on Sabbath because that is so fun for me. Caleb is laughing at me, but that is what I do. I love it so much. We spend a lot of time outside, like being active, playing tennis, whatever. I am a naturally very planner person. And so for me, I don't plan anything on Sabbath because it is a way that I can be distinctly different from how I am the rest of the week. If it's 2 p.m. and I really want to hang out with a friend, I will text them, but I won't make any plans that I have to do that day because it takes me out of that like restful state. It becomes like another thing I have to do. So truly just live the day however we want. We do a lot of puzzles. We don't really like watch TV or anything like that. We try to like remove ourselves from the busyness of the world as much as possible. But that is just our rhythm. We usually have a Sabbath snack. We like go and like buy special treats because it's Sabbath and it's fun. And then the day, we have a liturgy book that we use to open and close Sabbath, which is a really fun thing for us because it helps us like mark the day as something special and sacred. So we'll read the liturgy at the beginning, and then as we close the day, we'll read it. We'll usually light a candle. And then that's how we close Sabbath at 6 p.m. on Saturday. For us, we usually have a business meeting at the end of it, so we'll like talk about all the things that need to happen for the week after Sabbath. So we are prepared. We are planned for the week, but we don't let that like impede on Sabbath.
I think what I'm hearing in your Sabbath rhythms is there's just a lot of freedom.
And a lot of fun. Sabbath is fun.
A lot of freedom, a lot of fun. People, I think, can oftentimes mistake Sabbath for I do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that that's what Sabbath actually is.
Yeah.
I think Sabbath is being intentional with how you spend that time of rest by saying no to some of the things that are going to distract you and saying yes to the things in the ways in which God has made you. And so just for an example of like when I say there's freedom in Sabbath, for Lizzie and Grant, they don't plan anything, and you guys just kind of go and do whatever you want to do. For my family, we have to plan Sabbath, because if we don't, then we're just going to sit around in the mornings like, I don't know, what do you want to do? I don't know, what do you want to do? And then the kids are running around crazy, and then we all of a sudden we just get frustrated, and we're like, ah, we can't figure out what to do, and we need to do something because our kids are losing their minds. Yeah. And that is not restful for us, as you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is okay to plan your Sabbath day out. It is okay to go into it with a plan, as long as you're being intentional with, okay, I'm not filling my things up with work, but I'm filling them up with things that are going to give me life. And I'm not, and it's also not just like this inherently intrinsically selfish thing, because Sabbath can turn inward and like, okay, cool, I'm just going to do all the things that I like to do, and it's going to be a day about me. And that's also not what Sabbath is for. Sabbath is a day to acknowledge the way that God has created you and acknowledge God in all of the things, mm-hmm. and realize that God has made a good creation, and we get to enjoy that. And as we enjoy those things that God has given us, we acknowledge Him.
Absolutely. Yeah. I also think it's a day of proclaiming that God is enough, and I don't have to do X for it to, like, for things to work out. Like, I don't need to do my laundry. I don't need to clean. I don't need to, like, do my schoolwork, because I'm proclaiming that God is in control of all those things, and He will take care of it, and He has called me to rest, and so I get to enter into that joyfully.
That's good. Yeah. Okay, Lizzie, as we wrap up our time on the podcast, I know it's gone so fast, it's gone so quick. Where are you off to? What are you doing next?
TBD on a lot of things.
Yeah.
But that is okay. Grant and I just bought a fixer-upper house in Fort Worth, which
Hey-o.
Is very exciting and also terrifying. So if anyone wants to help me paint, let me know. I don't know where God has us next. I have a lot of ideas, which is not uncommon for me. But we'll see what He actually does. I think this has been a big part of me following God, is just over the past 3 years, He has changed a lot of our plans, mm-hmm. and what He has led us into have been better than what I anticipated or what I could have imagined. And so we're kind of just waiting on that this time around of like, okay, God, Your plan is better than mine. Mm-hmm. I have thoughts, but I want to like let You lead in it. And so go slow.
Lean into that just a little bit. What has the Lord taught you in the last couple months in that season?
I think it's more than a couple months. It's like the last 3 years since I graduated college. I had a lot of plans for what my life would look like. And because of overarchingly the Lord, but also things like the pandemic and other things like that, our life looked radically different than what I had anticipated. But I believe that following God is the better way. And so every place He's led us has been better than what I could have anticipated. And it was what He had for us, and I can have confidence in that. And so I think I've, like, one example is I've had to support raise during my 3 years since graduating college for this residency, and it made no sense. Like, I was working a normal 9-to-5 job, like getting paid, like doing all the normal post-grad things, but God really clearly called me to come work at the church and was like, yeah, you're gonna have to support raise, you're gonna have to do all these things. But He called me, and so it was going to be good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would have been easy to be like, that doesn't make any logical sense. Like, I'm already getting paid. I'm already doing this thing.
Sure.
I'm not going to do that. But it was very clearly what God asked me to do. And so stepping into that, He called me to it. So He was going to provide for it. He did provide for it. And then now I am leaving the residency. He's calling me out of it. He's calling me to something else. And so I can have confidence that He will provide in that. I think just in the past 3 years, He's built a ton of confidence in me, in Him, in that I don't need to know everything or know where I'm going, because He knows, and He will tell me when I need to know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. It's hard to be in those times, but when we are in those times, it forces us to, well, what it does, in my opinion, is it shows us where our trust is in, where our hope is in.
Yeah. I want to say one thing. It is hard. But also, I think it's really beautiful.
Sure.
I think over and over again, we emphasize that it's difficult in the uncertainty. It's difficult in the not knowing. But I also think it's the time I've had in the times of uncertainty is when I've had the deepest connection and intimacy with the Lord, is because I truly am so reliant on Him. And I feel like that is a big reason. I am a very independent person by nature. And I think God has, like, forced me into reliance on Him, into these really sweet moments with Him, by like placing uncertainty in my life. And So honestly, in some ways, I'm really excited because I get to enter into another season of walking really closely with the Lord as I try to figure out what he wants next.
That's good. That's good. Well, it has been a joy to have you, not only on this podcast, but also in the residency. And just for our current students who are listening, Lizzie is not necessarily going anywhere. She's not going to be resident, but she will still continue to be a coach in our ministry.
Can't get rid of me.
And you will see her and Grant around, and they will still be available to you. And so, man, Lizzie, I'm just grateful for both you and Grant. Grateful for what the Lord has done through you guys and your presence and all of the ways in which God has blessed us, blessed my family through friendship with you and Grant. And so I can't wait to see you at my daughter's one-year-old birthday party.
I am Caleb's one-year-old daughter's best friend.
It's very true. She loves you.
Her name is MJ.
She's a big fan of Lizzie, and we all are. And so thanks for joining. Thanks for hopping on the podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed listening to Lizzie's story and learning from her wisdom. And we will see you next time.
Thanks, Caleb. See you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.